Reports of foreign reporters beaten up, activists rounded up, limits placed on the internet, not in Libya, in China. For the last several weeks, there's been a small attempt at a jasmine revolution to mimic the one that started in Tunisia, a call for strolling protests, asking people to walk through popular shopping areas. But Chinese officials clamped down on the few protesters and also on foreign journalists. And historically, these crackdowns usually signal tougher controls on Chinese society in general. Now, the Chinese government denies reports of crackdowns, but something is obviously going on. Let's spend a few minutes here today with Barbara Demick, Beijing bureau chief for the Los Angeles Times. Barbara, welcome back to Here and Now.
Happy to be there.
And you know, it occurs to us, we use shorthand as we've been watching these uprisings in Tunisia and Egypt. We asked, is Tahrir Square in Egypt going to be the next Tiananmen Square? And that, of course, the brutal 1989 crackdown in China. But then reading some of your reporting, we're realizing that in China, people may not get either reference. You know, Tiananmen Square has been sort of cleansed from the history books. And what do the people in China know about what's going on in Libya and Egypt?
There has been a reasonable amount of coverage of the situation in Egypt and Libya, but it's with a very Chinese spin. The emphasis has been on rioting, loss of control. The Chinese are emphasizing that these countries are losing stability and it's bad. So that's the Chinese spin on it.
And yet, you know, you let us know that there are some voices emerging. There's someone who's tweeting, a dissident who tweets today, "We are all Egyptian." This is when President Mubarak left Egypt. He goes on to say it only took 18 days for the collapse of a military regime in power for 30 years, that being Egypt. It'll take China, which has been in power 60 years, several months. And you write about a new business magazine, which a few weeks ago editorialized that it's autocracy that creates chaos, democracy breeds peace. Supporting an autocracy is in reality trading short-term interests for long-term costs. That seems pretty astonishing.
There are people who see similarities. China is wrestling with high inflation, an authoritarian government. So we saw the parallels, but I think it might end there. The Chinese are determined not to let the jasmine revolution, so to speak, come to China. They, after ignoring it for a few months, have begun to nip it in the bud, and I think now overreacting. The calls for some kind of sympathy protest in China have generated this massive paranoia on the part of the Chinese government that I don't think was warranted by the limited sympathy for events in the Middle East.
Tell us about this very fledgling online call for protests, calls for strolling protests on Sundays. There was one attempt yesterday outside of the McDonald's. Who is making this online call and who's coming out?
Well, this is what's very interesting. We don't know where they're coming from. It seems to have started in the United States with a Chinese language site called Boshun, but somebody has begun putting these calls in very regularly, calling themselves different names, the organizers of the Jasmine Revolution, the Committee for the Jasmine Revolution. I mean, it seems to be probably a small group of people, probably out of China, who are doing it. And all it takes is somebody to put out one of these messages. It gets retweeted and posted, but a little message, and the Chinese government flies into a panic. What I think has been happening the last few weekends, we've now had 3 Sundays of these demonstrations that didn't quite materialize, is that they're almost doing it as a test of the Chinese government's security reflexes. I mean, it seems to be almost a deliberate attempt to drive the Chinese government crazy, chasing shadows because they don't know where the messages are arising. And the whole technique is also very ingenious, really. They're not calling for protests. They're calling for people to take a stroll, sanbu, make steps. And they say, you know, just show up, pretend to be shopping, walking by, and merely by your presence, the authoritarian government will be quaking. And it's really a psyops.
psychological operation. It sounds like it's just a, you know, something out of the handbook of Gene Sharp, who's the Harvard professor who lives here in Boston, whose manuals on protest have been read by dissidents around the world. But as you said, the Chinese government seems to have really cracked down, rounding up people at these sort of odd strolling protests, but also calling in journalists and berating them. Tell us a little bit about that.
Now, this is also very interesting. The first, let's call it a demonstration of sorts, February 20th, really very few participants attended. There were a lot of journalists and curiosity seekers. Frankly, I think if the Chinese government had ignored it, nothing more would have happened. You know, there's something with journalists where you tell them, don't go, and they go. You know, chances are that we would not want to go to a McDonald's on a Sunday afternoon, our only day off. But when you say don't go, it's kind of a challenge. So this tremendous security operation began, and the focus seems to be foreign journalists, sort of implying that the foreign press corps is creating this whole thing out of nothing. But, you know, our feeling is that they're creating it with excessive security. I was discussing this with some colleagues, and we wondered if it had to do with some deeper power struggle within the Chinese government. And we, the foreign press, have had a relatively good run since the Olympics in 2008. There was a decision made then that foreign press could cover the country without giving advance notice to where they're going. We could conduct interviews more or less freely, except for Tibet. And this seems to be a reversal of that. This so-called Jasmine Revolution has been used as an excuse to roll back the liberalization of 2008.
Well, and talk about some of the ways that they're doing that. You mentioned that Bochun, BOXUN.com, that's the American website. They say they've been attacked. Other sites like Chinese networking sites, Renren.com, were also blocked. And we know that you're reporting that the Chinese are also following cell phone signals so that if they see a whole bunch of cell phones heading to one place, they know where people might be gathering. So how is China, you know, trying to restrict any of this movement through technology?
Blocking the microblogs, blocking Twitter and Facebook, and we've all been having a hard time with our Gmail. They don't want these types of messages disseminated among the people. And, you know, you think how easy it is. I mean, we were joking about this, that somebody might be sitting in Boston or L.A. or Chicago over a beer kind of putting out this message, oh, everybody show up at 2 p.m. Tuesday and hold a jasmine flower or pretend to be demonstrating. And one message, you know, sent in half a second can create this enormous reaction.
Barbara Demick, Beijing bureau chief for the Los Angeles Times. And Barbara, you've been talking about some of the ways the government has been using technology to clamp down on potential protests, but you say they're also doing it with a physical presence on the streets?
They've been closing off the streets. I mean, it was quite comical. The Sunday before last, they blocked Wangfujing, this very popular pedestrian mall, and then they deployed an army of street cleaners, of street cleaning machines to spray water and to wash the street so nobody could walk there. This past Sunday, they decided that there would be a large, a very long fire drill at the Kentucky Fried Chicken, which was another location. What people are noticing is not the protest, but the reaction to this very elusive call for protests.
Well, in fact, the Irish Consul General in Shanghai had to cancel the annual St. Patrick's Day parade. Who knew?
Yeah, that's, you know, that's an example. You know, a large group of foreigners congregating, they don't like large gatherings.
Well, Barbara Demick, while we have you, in just sort of a related area, China also recently released figures on defense spending. It showed a nearly 13% increase to $91.5 billion. That's still just a fraction of American defense spending. But what's interesting is that China spends more on internal security for police and armed militias internally. How do you read that?
I think they are showing how frightened they are. There's enormous defense spending here in Tibet, in Xinjiang, the northwestern region, where you have a simmering Uyghur nationalist movement. You know, things to us seem very calm as observers, but when, again, you see their reaction and the enormous spending that they're making on internal defense, it all seems more precarious than we would otherwise believe.
And again, it's only tangentially related, but in another recent article that we'll post at hereandnow.org, just a really fascinating look at another human rights issue in China, a series looking at how the mentally disabled are being exploited, in fact becoming slave laborers, lured away from their families with promises of money, you know, essentially kidnapped and then sold into slavery in these brick factories, working at kilns where they're, you know, burned and starved. I mean, just a terrible story. But what we thought was interesting is family members are standing up and walking around with flyers and saying, "Where's my child? Where's my child?" Where do you expect that story to go?
You know, it's very interesting. I've done a lot of reporting on trafficking in China, both trafficking of adults, in this case, mentally disabled people who are forced into slavery, and very young children who are sold to families or sometimes put up for foreign adoption. The people who are losing loved ones really have been using new technology and microblogs and the new media to find loved ones who disappear. I find it fascinating because there's been child trafficking in China for years and years. There's been for centuries people who are gang pressed into slave labor. But now when, and it's a big, big country, but now when people go missing, they get the pictures up on the internet and you can trade information between provinces, and there is a lot more asserting of one's rights. And it's not like saying we want democracy or political slogans, but people are standing up.
Well, and I guess the question is, bringing us back full circle to where we started, do you think that there is any kind of tipping point in China based on this sort of human rights issue? Because we know that in Tunisia, Egypt, the uprisings, yes, were to overthrow an autocrat, but also because people were starving, poor, you know, had no jobs. There was a food riot in Egypt prior to that uprising. In China, there's this roaring economy. And I know it only benefits a small number of Chinese, but is there that same, you know, do you think that there is a tipping point around human rights?
No, I don't, actually. Again, what's very strange about this situation is I find that the Chinese I meet, at least the ethnic Han Chinese, are quite happy with this government. And I tend to see a lot of activists and petitioners, and by the nature of being a journalist, I do speak to a more discontent population. But I would say at the moment, the government is quite popular. The Communist Party is quite popular because of the strength of the economy. Now, they know well that that could change with an economic slowdown or continued inflation, but I don't think they're so vulnerable, and I think that's what, you know, some of us find strange about their reaction to these Twitter messages calling for a Jasmine revolution.
As you say, overreaction. Barbara Demick, the Beijing bureau chief for the LA Times in Beijing. Barbara, thank you so much, as always.
Thank you.